The president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document, which he is sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
We do have secret prisons. That is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, America. Welcome to The Inside Scoop. The Greek philosopher Aeschylus once said that in war, truth is the first casualty. Perhaps no more is that true today than in the conflict between Israel and Hamas. Now, it is an existential conflict in the sense that Hamas wants Israel to cease to exist. Israel wants to exist. It's very hard to find a compromise between existence and non-existence. Throughout the broadcast, I'll be showing you part of the Hamas charter so that you could have no doubt as to their intentions. But my concern in this broadcast, where I'll show you the charter, I'll also show you some of the discussions of the Israeli president, Shimon Peres, who's on the left wing of Israeli society, but is very much defending the Gaza war. I specifically don't want to talk about the media. You see, because perhaps Israel has refused to allow many Western journalists into Gaza, at least during the Gaza conflict, and that may well have been a mistake, or perhaps it was a good idea either to protect the reporters' lives or also to prevent them from giving away Israeli positions, as reporters did in the Lebanon war. But for whatever reason, the Western media has been taking press releases from Hamas, dictates from Hamas, and treating them as if they are true, reporting them as if they were fact, not even saying Hamas said this, but simply stating it as true. They've been doing the same with United Nations representatives as well, assuming that, for example, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency doesn't have a bias in this conflict. We're going to talk about all of these things. But first, I want to talk specifically about a story that you may have heard about, one that occurred just 3 weeks ago. The story was in all of the major media. It was certainly widely reported in the Washington Post and the New York Times. Perhaps we can show the story right here. The story, this is reported in by the AP. Israelis hit school, the story says. 30 killed. And it goes on to say that, even though we know in this story that witnesses saw that there were Hamas militants who shot missiles from the school grounds, shot rockets, I should say mortars, from the school grounds, Israel hit back, and at least according to the AP, Israel hit the school. Now, where would this information come from? Well, largely it came from the head of the United Nations Relief and Works Agency. That head would be Irishman John Jing. Here's John Jing the day after the attack going on the BBC and talking about what he said happened at the UN-run school.
Well, it's horrific. These poor people, 400 of them, fled from the northern Gaza Strip last night, seeking refuge because they were no longer safe in their homes. We had given them refuge in our school, and at 11:30 last night, three of them were using the toilet facilities in the school, and they had just come out of the toilets, and they were struck by a missile from an aircraft, and killed instantly. So it's just again more evidence of how dangerous it is. There's no place in Gaza safe for the ordinary people here, and they're terrorized by the fact that they can be next. The numbers speak for themselves, 600 dead, almost 3,000 injured. They're right to be terrorized.
I'll come back to that situation in a moment, but in terms of the school itself, the building, I mean, is it marked at all? Is it identified as a school, a UN building?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have provided the GPS coordinates of every single one of our locations. They are clearly marked with UN insignia, flags flying, lights shining on the flags at night, and so on. It's very clear that these are United Nations installations.
Just a final thought on this particular incident. What do you want to happen? I mean, would it? Are you calling for an investigation of any sort?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. They're calling for an investigation, and it sounds horrific. Let's go through the facts. As John Jing says, there were people taking refuge in the school. Three were using the toilet facilities, and as soon as they stepped outside the toilet, they were struck by missiles and killed instantly. Wow. He says there's no place in Gaza that's safe, and the people are right to be terrorized because no place is to be safe. And they gave the Israel the GPS coordinates, even had light shining on UN targets. It sure sounds like Israel hit that school. The Associated Press reported it. John Jing reported it. How could people come out of toilets and be hit by missiles if they weren't inside the school? Well, last Thursday, a different report came out, one by the Toronto Globe and Mail. This report, even though it came out last Thursday, has gotten extremely little attention in the mainstream press. Indeed, if you Google this report, you will see that only two newspapers in the world, one in the UK and one in Israel, have quoted from this Toronto newspaper. And what does the Toronto newspaper say? Well, here it is. Here's the report. Account of Israeli attack doesn't hold up to scrutiny. They go through and they interview John Jing, the exact same John Jing you saw on the BBC. And what you find out in this newspaper is that after witnesses to the attack said no one was killed inside the school, that no missile hit the school, that in fact there were Hamas militants shooting rockets from the courtyard, from nearby the school, and Israel went back and attacked nearby the school, and yes, a number of people were hurt. Anywhere from 30 to 43. We don't know how many were civilians, how many were Hamas operatives. Certainly some civilians were killed, and that is a horrific, awful thing. But John Jing said no place in Gaza is safe. He said that people in the refuge were attacked. Nobody who stayed inside the school was killed by an Israeli strike. Now, isn't that interesting? Shouldn't that be in the news? Let's go through and read what John Jing says. First of all, this is interesting. The teacher, a teacher inside the school who refused, this is according to the Toronto Globe and Mail, not me. The teacher, quote, refused to give his name because he said UNRWA, the UN Relief Works Agency, had told the staff not to talk to the news media. Why would the UN tell their staff not to talk to the news media? He was adamant. There were no dead inside the compound. Three of my students were killed, the teacher said, but they were all outside. Hazem Balusha, who runs an auto body shop across the road from the UNRWA school, was down the street. He showed a reporter where they landed, all three out on the road. So condemn Israel if you like. Talk about the fact that Israel shouldn't have responded to the Hamas mortar from outside the school. But the headlines? Israel hit refuge? No place in Gaza is safe? Well, but the people in the school were not killed. Huh. So let's see what John Jing has to say after being confronted by the fact that two witnesses in the area disputed what he said. Well, here's John Jing talking to the Toronto Globe and Mail in a story that got virtually no attention in the mainstream press. Quote, no one was killed in the school. I told the Israelis that none of the shells landed in the school. Really? The same John Jing you just saw on the BBC? Huh. He goes on to say, look at my statements. I never said anyone was killed in the school. Our officials never made any such allegation. But he did say that those in the school were families seeking refuge. He said there's nowhere safe in Gaza. He said that three people who had just used the toilet and were killed by a missile. What he didn't say is that those three people who had just used the toilet went outside nearby where Hamas operatives were shooting mortars. He neglected to mention that little fact in calling for an investigation of Israeli war crimes. And also, unfortunately, John Jing is not telling the truth when he says the UN did not report that Israeli missiles hit the school. In fact, as the Toronto Globe and Mail points out, in its daily bulletin, the World Health Organization reported on January 6th, 42 people were killed following an attack on a UNRWA school. They also go on to say that Israeli shelling directly hit two UNRWA schools. We know for a fact that all of that was false. Now, why does this matter? Does that mean that Israel is guiltless? Maybe not. Well, I want to discuss this on the broadcast. Can you defend yourself in a wartime without killing civilians? Could Israel have fought back against Hamas, stopped the missile strikes on its territory, and done so without harm to the Gaza civilian population? Could they have done so with less harm? Israel is not beyond criticism. But what's striking to me is how much the media laps up Hamas propaganda as if it were true when we know that it's false. This is not the first time, or the second time, or the third, fourth, fifth, or sixth time this has happened. Perhaps the most famous example was in Jenin during the Second Intifada. I remember this well. Peter Jennings reporting on the news that 5,000 Palestinian Arabs, men, women, and children, were massacred in Jenin. They called it the Great Jenin Massacre. 5,000 people. Sounds horrific. Sounds awful. Weeks later, we learned from an investigation that in trying to stop the terrorists who had a nice little bomb factory in Jenin, 54 people were killed, of which 43 were identified as belonging to the terrorist organizations building the bombs, the militants themselves. Now, that means that as many as 11 innocent people were killed. And you can argue that that was or was not a right way to respond to the thousands of Israeli civilians that were being killed by bomb factories such as those in Jenin. Maybe it was right, maybe it was wrong. But Peter Jennings said 5,000 were killed, and he did so without checking his sources. We've done other stories and other false stories coming out of the region. For example, there's the case of Mohammed al-Dura. I did a whole show on that about 2 years ago. You can check it on my website at radioinsidescoop.com. This was the horrific image of a boy cowering behind a barrel with his father there, supposedly to avoid Israeli shots, and then was shot by the Israeli soldiers. That was the story. It turns out to be completely fraudulent. And this was proven by no less than a French appellate court. France isn't usually very pro-Israel. Again, the story got widespread world media attention. The retraction got virtually none. There are other examples. There's an example where Israel was supposed to have hit an ambulance put out by Human Rights Watch, proven, again, took some weeks and months after an investigation to be a complete forgery. Or the example that I showed in my show 3 years ago, where you had a young Arab boy paint red on his forehead and then lie down in a stretcher to get in front of the cameras to show that he'd been shot when he had not been shot. This is not to say that abuses don't happen. This is not to say that Gaza civilians aren't suffering. They are suffering miserably. It is to say, however, that the world media needs to focus on what's true and what's not true. And when they get a report from Hamas, they shouldn't accept it as fact. They should question it. They could say, for example, I'd have no problem with saying Hamas reported today that Israel hit a school, and then say what Fatah says. Fatah, of course, is the Palestinian Authority, the legitimate rulers of Palestine before the Hamas took it over in a coup in 06. And Fatah will tell you that Hamas hides arms in schools, in hospitals. They will tell you, in fact, that the largest Hamas bunker, the place where they kept most of their weapons, the place where most of their leaders hung out during the Gaza conflict, was underneath Gaza's largest hospital, Al-Shifra Hospital. What are we to make about all these allegations? Why isn't the mainstream media condemning Hamas as much as they're condemning Israel? We'll try to answer those questions after the break. If you want to call in and comment on anything I've said, you're free to do so. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Back after this.
Too many women get hit by their boyfriends and husbands. Too many women are pressured into having unprotected sex. Half of the people in the world living with AIDS are women. It doesn't have to be this way. Together, we can change this reality. Let's strive for a world free of violence.
At Volunteers of America, we don't just give kids a way to stay off the streets. We give them the tools they need to reach their full potential. We don't just help the elderly receive needed care. We help them live life to the fullest. We don't just provide food for homeless individuals and families. We provide job training and placement so they can buy groceries. Volunteers of America is a national organization that for over 100 years has provided programs and services that allow people to overcome their challenges to become vital members of their community. At Volunteers of America, we don't just help people, we help people help themselves. Find out how you can support the programs that are working in your community. Contact Volunteers of America today. Call 1-800-899-0089.
Drivers face all kinds of distractions. Before your wireless phone becomes one of them, stop. Drive safely. Keep your phone in easy reach and dial sensibly. In bad weather or traffic, call later and use a hands-free device. Remember, with wireless, safety is your call.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the recent conflict in Gaza and the media reporting of it. Again, I don't mean to say that Israel is beyond criticism. It's perfectly fair to suggest that Israel had other ways to fight in Gaza. I'm not so sure that's true. But perhaps they could have done more to lessen civilian casualties. And that's a fair criticism. The thing that gets me, though, is how few people are criticizing Hamas. How few people are recognizing the true source of the suffering of the people of Gaza. Some suggest that Hamas is simply a government and that its goals are simply to provide for the people of Gaza. Well, you don't have to believe me. Let's look at Hamas and what they have to say about what their organization is and what their goals are. You may be surprised to learn that Hamas is not just anti-Israel. They are anti-Jewish. They believe in killing Jews. They support a second Holocaust. Let me read from the very charter of Hamas. I have it right here. It's a very long document, and if you want the full document, I'll be happy to provide it for you. Just go to radioinsightscoop.com and email me. This is their covenant, and they say, and I'm just going to read selected quotes from it, Israel will exist and will continue to exist until Islam will obliterate it, just as it obliterated others before it. They go on to say, this covenant of the Islamic Resistance Movement, Hamas, clarifies its picture, reveals its identity, outlines its stand, explains its aims, speaks about its hopes, and calls for its support, adoption, and joining its ranks. Our struggle against the Jews is very great and very serious. Note, Hamas doesn't say a struggle against Israel. It's, for them, it is a struggle against the Jews. Let's go on. They say that they strive to raise the banner of Allah over every inch of Palestine. Now, this isn't the peaceful Palestinians who support a two-state solution, who want to have a Jewish state and an Arab state in the region. They strive to raise the banner of Allah over every inch of Palestine. One inch, or a foot, an acre, to be a Jewish state, one place on all the earth as a refuge for Jews, is too much for Hamas. Jews learned, of course, after 3,000 years of persecution by virtually every country on the earth, that even during the Holocaust, even the great United States of America refused to accept the refugees from the gas chambers. Indeed, it's largely because of the Holocaust and anti-Semitism beforehand that Jews went back to their homeland, to Judea, the place from which Jews get their name, to establish a Jewish state there. And from the beginning, the Jews were willing to compromise a Jewish state and an Arab state. For Hamas, there is no compromise. For Hamas, every single bit of Palestine has to be an Islamic state. That should worry not just Jews, but Christians and even secular Muslims who may not want to live under an Islamic theocracy. Let's go on and look at more of their charter. It's all, again, it's right here in the open. It reminds me of the people who didn't read Hitler's Mein Kampf and didn't believe that he was out to kill Jews if they'd only read what he wrote. In fact, some say, I've even heard people argue, that Hitler didn't really plan the Holocaust till later because Mein Kampf only talks about killing tens of thousands of Jews rather than all the Jewish people. Well, Hamas's charter goes much farther than Hitler's Mein Kampf. Let's go back to the document. The Islamic Resistance Movement aspires to the realization of Allah's promise, no matter how long that should take.
The prophet, Allah bless him and grant him salvation, has said the day of judgment will not come until Muslims fight the Jews, killing the Jews, when the Jew will hide behind stones and trees. The stones and trees will say, O Muslims, O Abdullah, there is a Jew behind me, come and kill him. Allah is its target, the Prophet is its model, the Quran its constitution, jihad is its path, and death for the sake of Allah is the loftiest of its wishes. Now let me be very, very, very clear here. This is not, in my view, any indication of Islam or Muslims. This is not at all any indication of the way most Muslims feel or the way Islam teaches. This is a perversion of Islam. And the fact that Hamas would use a great and holy religion of Islam to turn it into a weapon to commit a second Holocaust is atrocious. And I think that everyone of all good faith should condemn them for it. I do not condemn Islam at all. I do condemn Hamas's perversion of Islam, and I don't think people should be complacent and think that it's not there when it's so clearly laid out in their charter. Let's go on. I'm going to read a lot from the charter today. The Islamic Resistant Movement believes the land of Palestine is an Islamic waqf, consecrated for future Muslim generations until Judgment Day. It, or any part of it, should not be squandered. It, or any part of it, should not be given up. No place for a two-state solution there. The waqf remains as long as earth and heaven remain. Then they go on to say, Hamas says some really awful things about Jews. They claim that Jews will not accept Muslims or Christians that don't follow their religion. As it turns out, Jews don't practice conversion, proselytization. They say there is no solution, this is crucial, there is no solution for the Palestinian question except through jihad. Initiatives, proposals, and international conferences are all a waste of time and vain endeavors. These aren't my words, these are the words of Hamas. The Palestinian people know better than to consent to have their future rights and fate toyed with. No peace conferences, no international support, nothing. It's all a mistake. They will not stop. Then they go on to say all kinds of things, that Jews were behind the French Revolution, the Communist Revolution, that Jews are behind Freemasons, Rotary Clubs, the Lions, that Jews caused World War I, that Jews caused World War II. In fact, quote, there is no war going on anywhere without having their finger on it. A pretty horrific libel, if you ask me. They go on to say that the Jews and Zionists are undermining societies. They're behind the drug trade and alcoholism in all its kinds. We should not forget, Hamas writes in their charter, to remind every Muslim that when the Jews conquered the Holy City in 1967, they stood on the threshold of the Aqsa Mosque and proclaimed that Muhammad is dead and his descendants are all women. Do you know of any Jewish leader, any soldier, anyone who stood on the Al-Aqsa Mosque and said, Muhammad is dead and his descendants are all women? Does that make any sense? Does anyone believe this nonsense? Hamas apparently does. There's a lot more in this charter. They cite the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, that famous forgery. They go on to say that there'll be an enmity forever against the warmongering Jews, that Allah will extinguish them. And other quotes of the Hamas officials include the following. Jews are a people who cannot be trusted. They've been traitors to all agreements. Their fate is vanishing. Suffering by fire is the Jews' destiny in this world and the next, said Sheikh Yunus al-Astal of Hamas. We are sure that the Holocaust is still to come upon the Jews. We will not rest until we destroy the Zionist entity. And he goes on to say that Rome has planted the Brothers of Apes and Pigs in Palestine in order to prevent the reawakening of Islam. I assume the Brothers of Apes and Pigs are Jews. Do not doubt that Hamas is anti-Semitic. Do not doubt Hamas's goal of an additional genocide. There is an existential conflict between Hamas and Israel. Israel wants to exist. Hamas wants Israel to cease to exist. So what's to be done? Does this mean that there's no possible solution to Israeli-Palestinian conflict? I don't think so. The Palestinian Authority, this is the successor to the Palestine Liberation Organization, it was once a terrorist organization, but decided to forswear violence and to negotiate with Israel. Mahmoud Abbas, I have no doubt, is an honorable man who's trying hard to have an agreement. It's very hard to have an agreement when you have Hamas lobbing all these rockets into Israel. I now want to play for you, and we're going to have to take a break in the middle, but I want to play for you some of Shimon Peres's comments. Shimon Peres is the current president of Israel, but the president of Israel is a ceremonial post. The real power is in the prime minister. Interestingly, Israeli voters have consistently rejected Peres for prime minister because they consider him too much on the left, too soft to the Arabs, too conciliatory, too interested in peacemaking. He is considered by most Israelis to be too giving in to the Arabs. But what's fascinating is in the recent World Economic Conference in Davos, Peres got upset. He got upset at the Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan, who had accused Israel of all manner of atrocities in Gaza, some of which were completely unfair. I want you to listen to what Shimon Peres has to say and recognize that Peres is considered on the left of the Israeli spectrum, recognizing that there's an election coming up in Israel just this month. And I have to say, based on world media reports and the condemnation of Israel without also condemning Hamas, I expect Israeli voters to tighten up, to become more paranoid, and frankly, to support the person on the right, to support Netanyahu. And they will do so precisely because the world is treating Israel as if it is the sole entity that's wrong in the conflict, and not saying anything about Hamas's goal, which is, after all, genocide. When we come back after the break, I'm going to play that clip. I do want to say a few more things, though, that have not been in the mainstream media. We'll play the clip after the break. One of the things that hasn't been in the mainstream media is where the humanitarian aid is going. There's been a lot of criticism. Israel has allowed 40,000 tons of humanitarian aid into Gaza. There's been criticism that that is insufficient. What has not been often reported, though, is what happens to that aid. According to a number of people in Gaza, including people belonging to Fatah, including to the Jordanian Red Crescent, who you would think would not be particularly pro-Israel, Hamas takes the aid and sells it. The aid is supposed to be free, but they sell it, and they use it to try to entice people to join Hamas. They refuse aid to anyone in Fatah. So when humanitarian aid from Israel goes into Gaza, it serves to prop up Hamas. Is this a story you saw in the Washington Post? Because I didn't see it. You want to call and comment, call 888-488-MARK, or type on the website at radioinsidescoop.com. When we come back, the clip from President Shimon Peres of Israel at the Davos conference.
Osama bin Laden calls getting nuclear weapons a religious duty.
Today, materials that can be used to make nuclear weapons are stored in more than 40 countries.
Sometimes protected by just a chain-link fence.
Yet not enough is being done to lock down these materials
before terrorists steal them. Why did we learn all this?
My mother.
My son.
My sister-in-law.
Were all murdered September 11th.
Help protect America.
Together we can.
Please join us.
The stem cell issue is being debated throughout the country. Truth is, most everyone has an opinion, even if they don't know the facts.
Let's stop arguing and start really understanding the potential of stem cell research.
For us and for millions of Americans living with disabilities, get the facts.
Call 1-877-842-3442 for free information from the Stem Cell Research Foundation. That's 1-877-842-3442.
Following the tragic events of September 11th, there have been hundreds of violent attacks against innocent Americans.
Remember what that flag you're waving stands for.
Remember, please stop the hate.
We're stronger when we are united.
Remember. Remember what that flag you're waving stands for.
One nation under God.
Indivisible.
With liberty.
And justice.
For all.
In America, there's either room for everyone or it's not America.
Don't pick the wrong fight.
Let's keep America land of the free.
Stop the hate.
Planning a home renovation? Put this at the top of your to-do list.
Because after 10 years, none of you are protected against tetanus and another potentially fatal disease, diphtheria.
A minor injury, such as a cut or a scrape, can put you at risk for a tetanus infection.
And while safety gear offers some protection, An up-to-date vaccination called the TD booster is the best insurance against tetanus. So get the TD booster. If it's been 10, do it again.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I want to play a clip from the World Conference in Davos, Switzerland. This is a clip from a conference that got a lot of attention after it occurred. On the stage was the United Nations Security Council head, Ban Ki-moon, and you also had the leader of the League of Arab Nations, and you also had Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan and Israeli President Shimon Peres. Now, as I said before, Shimon Peres has a ceremonial post, largely because he's considered too much on the left of Israeli society. And yet, when Erdogan gave a very strong denunciation of Israel's conduct in Gaza, Shimon Peres gave a quite strongly, well, I'll play it for you. He gave, I think, a strong reply. The reply was so strong that Erdogan then responded and wanted more time to respond. When the time was up, he stormed off the stage, causing quite a crisis. What was it that made Erdogan so mad? See if you can figure it out. This is Shimon Peres.
I heard the distinguished speakers talking about Israel, and they couldn't recognize the picture of the country that they know. I want to tell at the beginning, it's very difficult when a democratic country has to confront an illegal terroristic group. Whatever we do is being photographed. Whatever they do, nobody sees. For example, when you throw a rocket on a settlement in Israel, it's not being photographed. You cannot see the mother trying to defend her child the whole night and have a sleepless night. Did you ever saw on television a sleepless night? I have much respect for you, Mr. Prime Minister, but I must put things as they really are. Let me start with democracy, first of all. Who was elected by the Palestinians? Not Hamas, but Mr. Abbas, who is called Abu Mazen. 62% of the Palestinians voted for him to be the president of the Palestinian people. And we negotiate with him. Hamas participate in the elections, but they have a very unique idea about democracy. They think a democracy is a story of one day in 4 years. You go through the elections. After the elections, you can start to shoot and kill and threaten. Finished. Democracy is not a matter of elections. It is a civilization.
Let me explain what Shimon Peres is talking about, because you may not know. It is true that Mahmoud Abbas, the head of the Palestinian Authority, was elected by 62%. There was a subsequent election for the parliament in the Palestinian territories. In that election, Hamas got 42% of the vote. That 42% was a plurality. It was higher than any of the other parties. Fatah got about 40%, and then the small parties got the remaining 18%. In doing so, they won a majority, 54% of seats in the Palestinian parliament. After winning that majority, they then went out and shot and killed and tortured all of the opposition parties like Fatah in the territories. What Peres is saying is that winning an election is not enough. And I'll give you a similar example. Adolf Hitler was democratically elected. Indeed, in his last election in 1939, he won not 42%, but 43% of the vote. Like Hamas, he won a plurality of the vote. Like Hamas, he was put in power democratically. Like Hamas, he then went on to kill and torture and imprison all of his political opponents. I have no problem saying that Hitler was a Democrat in his first 2 months in office. But following the burning of the Reichstag, who would say that Hitler was a Democrat after that point? For people to say Hamas is democratically elected and is a legitimate authority in Gaza, they would have to likewise agree that Hitler was a legitimate authority in Germany throughout the entire time of his reign. Perez is pointing out winning one election by a plurality is not enough. You have to allow opposition political parties to function. Let's go on with what he has to say.
And I want to contradict you, Wells, by quoting from the Hamas. I won't be going to inner Arab stories. But Hamas concerns us. Hamas published a charter. Let me just read three lines from it, from the Hamas charter. The day of judgment will not come about until the Muslims kill the Jews, when the Jews will hide behind stones and trees. There is no solution for peace initiative, proposals, international conferences are all a waste of time. This is an official charter. I don't know about which Hamas are you talking. Now, about the proportions. In the last 8 years, I mean, I hate to say it, but since you mentioned it, let me give the other picture too. Israel lost 1,167 lives from terrorists. 8,500 were wounded. It wasn't done in 20 days, it was done in several years. We restrained all the time. And then, since the last 4 years, when Hamas took over Gaza, 5,500 rockets and 4,000 mortars, shells, were fired upon civilian life in Israel at random. We didn't care if it's kindergarten, if it's... we didn't answer. For that reason, the ceasefire idea, Mr. Prime Minister, is very strange in our views. We never started fire. And we told the Palestinians time and again, don't fire, there won't be fire. We are not two equal parties at all. We never started.
This, I think, is just a crucial point. What Perez is saying is that we didn't need a ceasefire. Israel wasn't firing. They were firing on us. And we told them, stop. So the ceasefire could only come from Hamas until finally Israel had to fight back. Let's go on.
And who renewed, who broke? By the way, we didn't have a formal agreement about the ceasefire. They announced, and the Palestinians said, it's over. No, they broke it. And when the Prime Minister was at your place at 4 days before the operation started, the government of Israel didn't yet decide to take actions against it. Now let me, I want you to listen because you watch all of your television, I can understand your feeling. Israel left Gaza completely, no occupation. We took out all of our soldiers from Gaza, all our civilians. People are talking about settlements. We took out from Gaza all the settlements and all the settlers, 15,000 of them. Nobody forced us. It was our own choice. We have had to mobilize 45,000 policemen to bring them back home at the cost of $2.5 billion. I want to understand, why did they fight rockets against us? What for? There was not any siege against Gaza. All the passages were open. Not only that, we participated in investing money in Gaza to develop an agriculture. We have a Paris center. We ourselves put in $20 million, to build greenhouses, to develop strawberries, the export of strawberries, excellent strawberries, flowers. Jimmy Wolfenson, who was a representative of the quartet, took from his own pocket $5 million also to participate in it. They destroyed it. Why? They bombed all the passages. Why? Why did they fire at us? What did they want? We didn't occupy. There was never a day of starvation in Gaza. By the way, Israel is the supplier of water daily to Gaza. Israel is the supplier of fuel to Gaza. The only thing we didn't permit to bring in is rockets from Iran. and they build tunnels to do it. And you know, we also have women and children, and they want to sleep at night. You know what it means? Every day, almost 100 rockets falling at random. 1 million people have had to be under shelter. They came to the government and says, what happened to you? We won't have security. Why do you permit to happen it? And I want anybody telling me clearly what were the reasons for the attack. What were the purposes of the attack? Peace. We made peace with Egypt. Not by arms, by agreement and negotiation. And we met all the requests of Egypt. We made peace with Jordan, the same. We gave back all the land, all the water. We opened with the Palestinians and we told them that we are for a Palestinian state. I started in Oslo against a majority maybe of our people who didn't agree. And all the time, you know, Mr. Prime Minister, why you have had to wait? Because many buses that came from the West Bank to Jerusalem were full of dynamite. I was then Prime Minister, I saw it with my own eyes, the blood and the bodies. You know, I don't have to watch television. And when I came in, there were thousands of people shouting at me, traitor, killer, look what you did to us. You must. There are many details that you have to know. Israel is 60 years old. Do you know any other country that in 60 years has had to go through 7 wars, 2 intifadas, an ongoing boycott? What? Why? And in spite of it, we made peace with Egypt. I have the highest respect for President Mubarak. By the way, President Mubarak accused Hamas, not us. And President Mubarak knows the situation not less than you, Mr. Prime Minister. And President Abbas knows the situation not less than you do. And he accused Hamas, not us. And then mothers and children came to the government and says, what will happen? 1 million people every night have had to hide themselves in shelters. Mothers with sleepless nights. What do you really mean? By the way, I never saw anybody demonstrating against those missiles. That was okay? Nobody said a word. And we didn't answer. A day in, a day out, a year in, a year out. There is a limit to it. And by the way, and I have much respect also for the Secretary General, who used to be, and we hope, I hope, is still friend. I appreciate very much their initiative. But there is a problem in it, and I don't want to hide it. The problem is not the Arab world. The problem is the Iranian ambition to govern the Middle East. They supplied the rockets to Hezbollah. They supplied the rockets to Hamas. They are controversial in the Arab making. And you know what? We didn't have a choice. The leader of Hezbollah, Nasrallah, says, would I know that Israel will react so strongly, we wouldn't start it. Thank you very much.
Did Israel have a choice? Should Israel have responded? What would you do if you were leader of a country that had 5,500 rockets and 4,000 mortars? And if you think Israel should have responded, but not in the way it did, I'm anxious to hear from you too. 888-488-MARK. How do you think Israel should have responded? Should it have done nothing and continued to allow 1 million of its citizens to be under rocket fire? How should it have responded in a different way? More when we come back.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm playing for you now the, I think, quite eloquent defense of Israel's actions by its president, Shimon Peres. Now, remember, Shimon Peres is on the left side of Israel. There are many, many parties in Israel, and no one can argue that Israel is not a very fractious democracy. There are probably more than a dozen parties. There's the far right-wing party, Avigdor Lieberman. There's the right-wing Likud, run by Netanyahu. There's the center, Kadima, That's Tzipi Livni's party. Then there's the left party, the Labor Party, Ehud Barak's party. This is the party Shimon Peres is from. And then you have the far left, which would be Meretz. Then you have a number of Arab parties. 20% of Israel's population is Arab. And you also have a number of Jewish religious parties. It is a very complex democracy where 1% of the vote gives you a seat in parliament. They don't do districts the way we do here in the United States. It's an extremely democratic government. Well, Peres was considered to be on the left side of Israel, someone who gave away a lot to the Arabs, someone who really worked hard to make peace. He was indeed the one who started the Oslo agreements that brought the Palestinian Liberation Organization back to the territories and gave them the territory that they have today. Interestingly, 94% of Israeli Jews supported the current operation. Even the far-left party Meretz, the most critical of Israeli actions, supported the response to the missiles. Indeed, a protest against the Gaza operation in Israel drew a mere 1,000 people. Other protests in Israel have had hundreds of thousands. Why is Israel all in support of this? Let me go back to Shimon Peres.
And then come Mashal, the leader of Hamas, and said, Israel reacted too strongly. What did they expect us to do? I don't understand. What would any country do? What would you do if you would have on Istanbul every night 10 rockets or 100 rockets? And we never gave up. All my life, as you said, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate, I'm fighting for peace. What we did is not the thing that we wanted to do. It's not our choice. Our choice is peace. What we did is because the lack of a choice. We weren't left with a choice. Would you go for such a convention to kill the Jews? Okay, those are words. But to kill the Jews and send rockets to kill them. What do you want us to do? I started to negotiate with Mr. Arafat. I must respect. It wasn't simple. The PLO was at the beginning a terroristic organization. Mr. Arafat agreed to stop terror and go to negotiations. By the way, whatever was achieved positively was achieved not by rockets, not by force, not by power, but by negotiation. It takes time. It's a very complicated country. It's a small country with three religions, with a lot of history, with different ethnicities. It's not simple. We made peace once, twice. Now we are negotiating with the Palestinians. There was a crisis among the Palestinians. We don't intend to be the one that decides if the Palestinians will be united or not. As long as Hamas did not rebel against the Fatah, it wasn't our business. We didn't say a word. You know what? I'm talking about Israel. Look what the people of the Palestinian people, the Secretary General of Fatah is saying about Hamas 3 days ago. His name is Asar Abed Rabu, a person that they know and respect, who is the Secretary General of the PLO Executive Committee. And I quote him 3 days ago. Hamas has turned Gaza schools, mosques, all universities into centers of detention, interrogation, and torture. Dozens have been shot in the legs, beaten savagely, and had their bones broken. Hamas plundered trucks, bringing and distributes it only to the food, only to the supporters of their movement. They didn't give food to the people of Fatah. They killed 100 leaders of Fatah in full daylight. They throw them from the roofs. What do they really mean? Is that a matter of definitions? Israel does not want to shoot anybody. For us, all children are as important as one can think of. I created a paracenter.
I'm going to stop it right here because I still have a lot more to say. Perez's English is not perfect, but his point is clear. Even the Palestinian Authority will tell you that Hamas is torturing people, breaking their bones, throwing people from roofs. If you go to my website, you will see the links I have to stories about Hamas shooting Palestinians for doing such horrific things as, yes, smiling in public. They felt that anyone smiling in public during the conflict between Israel and Hamas was an enemy of the state, an enemy of Hamas, and they shot those people in the kneecaps. So here's my question. Here's my question. If you want to condemn Israel, if you want to attack Israel, that's fine. People have a right to make whatever opinion they want. But I have a real significant problem with those that attack Israel and don't also attack Hamas. I have a question from a listener. How do I feel about Tony Blair and the current British Prime Minister who want to negotiate with Hamas? What I think about Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan? I don't think there is negotiation with Hamas. Hamas has said we won't negotiate. Hamas has said we won't give an inch. Hamas has said our goal is a second Holocaust. How do you negotiate with someone like that? I mean, it seems to me that Neville Chamberlain had a better chance with Adolf Hitler to negotiate than the current Prime Minister of Britain does with Hamas. Now, if people want to do, you know, like Egypt is trying to do, and I really respect Egypt's role in trying to do, to talk to both sides, fine. Fine. But do I trust Hamas to keep its agreements? No, I don't. Not at all. How do you end the suffering of the people of Gaza? You only do it by getting rid of Hamas. So here's my question, and it's for people on the left and for people on the right. There's rising anti-Semitism across the world. Synagogues are being bombed. Jewish schools all across Europe, South America, Venezuela, Turkey are being harmed. And I can't tell you how many people I hear, liberal talk show hosts, saying, I'm not anti-Semitic, I'm just anti-Israel. Let me state, if I could, what I think is the distinction. Can you be against Israel's policies without being anti-Semitic? Of course you can. Of course you can. I'm often against American policies. I'm often against Israeli policies. To be against Israeli policies does not make you anti-Semitic. But one liberal talk show host recently quoted a man named Paul Craig Roberts. Paul Craig Roberts has said that Jews control the media. Paul Craig Roberts has said Obama should be tried for war crimes. Paul Craig Roberts has said 9/11 was a conspiracy by the United States government. Those things were not discussed very much. This liberal talk show host instead quoted Paul Craig Roberts for saying, quote, there's no difference between the massacres in Gaza caused by Israel and the crimes for which the Nazis were tried at Nuremberg. Is that anti-Semitic? I think it is. There's a huge difference between fighting in self-defense and genocide. If you criticize Israel's behavior as disproportionate, that's fair. If you compare Israel to the Nazis, are you an anti-Semite? Yes, I think you are. You have to be. What is the purpose of comparing 1,000 civilian deaths, if it's that much, and it may well be, with 6 million men, women, and children sent to gas chambers? Do you know what genocide means? Genocide is the systematic attempt to destroy an entire people. It's going on right now in Darfur. Almost 1 million black Muslims, as it happens, are being killed by Arab Muslims as we speak. That, my friends, is genocide. What happened in Cambodia was genocide. What happened in Rwanda was genocide. In Gaza, you have 250,000 people there in 1950 and 1.5 million today. Their population has grown more than any other place on earth virtually, 6 times in 50, 60 years. Whatever Israel's doing in Gaza, it's not genocide. And to say so, let me suggest to you, is purposely said to demean the Holocaust, to demean Holocaust victims. If you compare Israel to the Nazis, you are trying purposely to say the Holocaust was no big deal. It's just fine. Now, I know this liberal host said that he didn't always agree with Paul Craig Roberts. I would hope that he and others would not cite him again. And let me just say this. I'm willing to accept criticism of Israel. I'm willing to accept people who protest against Israel's actions. But I want to see those same people out there protesting against Hamas torturing and plucking the eyes out of innocent people in Gaza. If they were to protest those and Israel's actions, I would believe they are of good faith. But if they only protest Israel, if they only are concerned when Jews kill Arabs in self-defense, and they're not concerned when 1 million Iraqi and Iranian innocent civilians are killed in the Iran-Iraq War of 1982, or when Syria wipes out their fourth largest city of Hama, or when Jordan is in Black September killing thousands, if the only Arab civilians that people care about are those killed by Jews, then I would suggest to you that those people who are criticizing Israel don't really give a damn about Palestinian Arabs. They're simply out to get the Jewish state. If you have comments on anything I've said today, go to my website, radioinsidescoop.com. Mark Levine.